Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we co-host this weekly journey through all things fermented, every Monday night live at 7 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
It's also archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Yep.
So check it out if you're not listening to it right now, but you are, because here's my voice. Mary, what's going on in the world?
First of all, we have a fundraiser for New York City Beer Week that's being put on by the New York City Brewers Guild.
That will take place on December 5th at Brooklyn Brewery. There is a link to get tickets on Brooklyn Brewery's website. There will be information at NewYorkCityBrewersGuild.com, but there will also be information at FomentAboutIt.com. Tickets are about halfway sold out. There's going to be all the guild members are going to be serving their beer, some pretty fun and special beers. I'll be serving the Imperial Darmstadt, which I brewed with my friend Ray Darmstadt from St. Gambrinus Beer Shop. And also Honey Brew Brew using local honey from Wilk Apiary. I'm very excited about that. But also, we're serving the food there. So we'll be doing bulgogi sliders from 508 Gastro Brewery.
Awesome. The beer list, they put a preliminary beer list up, and it's pretty killer. So,
and if you're not available for it, please, please buy tickets for your friends or something and just send them there, because this is what this is our fundraiser to help New York City Beer Week go through in February, the dates of which are February 21st to March 2nd.
Cool. And then on Sunday following that, December 8th, we will be having our Chocolate and Spice Home Fermentation Fest that we're putting on with Jimmy's Number 43 and Divine Chocolate. So that's open to anybody that home ferments. You can either use a cocoa or chocolate from Divine, which we will provide free of charge. Just shoot us an email or tweet at us or whatever. Or you can use any kind of spice. So alcoholic or non-alcoholic, food or beverage, anything fermented is fair game as long as it either has Divine cocoa or chocolate or any type of spice.
What kind of things fermented are we talking about?
Anything. So it could start. What are you bringing,
beer.
Chris?
Oh, I'm bringing a Divine Cocoa for Coconuts Cream Ale. So I brewed it with Divine Cocoa, and I'm throwing some toasted coconuts in there, and it's a cream ale, so hopefully it'll be deceptive. It'll be bright.
Awesome.
In color.
And I'm going to make a cocoa short mead.
But other people are going to hopefully bring. We'll have beer. We'll have mead. We'll have.
We have some bread products, right?
We have some bread products. We have some whey fermented sodas. We have some fermented sodas. It runs down all the list of fermented stuff all the way to kombucha.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm. What is kombucha? Today's show is all about
which
kombucha.
So we're very fortunate to have Jessica Child from Kombucha Brooklyn in the studio. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So well, first of all, how long has Kombucha Brooklyn been around? When did you guys start?
Kombucha Brooklyn has been around for about 4.5 years. I actually met my partner right as he was starting it. So he probably started a little bit before, I should say, he did start a little bit before I came on. So it was started, and then I came on, and we've been in business for about 4.5 years.
And we see it all over town. I think I've seen it at, you know, various grocery stores that do growler fills. Mm-hmm. Or I just had a glass at Taproom 307.
Awesome.
Last week. It was delicious.
You guys are kegging.
We are kegging. We are kegging kombucha. We have kombucha in bottles. We are just switched actually from a 16-ounce, which we thought was a little bit too big to drink on one sitting, to a 12-ounce bottle, which you beer drinkers may be more comfortable with.
Yeah.
And we also have a complete line of homebrew supplies. So we have kind of three legs to our kombucha vision.
And newest to that and complimentary is your excellent new book called Kombucha.
With an exclamation point.
Hey,
don't forget
about
the
it.
Exclamation point.
Yeah. And I had had your kombucha several times over the years, but I had never made it out to where you guys have your production facility.
The kombucha lab.
Your office, yes. Mm-hmm. And so I went to, you have a monthly happy hour. So mm-hmm. it's in the old Pfizer building that's now a kind of a kitchen incubator.
That's right.
For the most part.
That's
small
right.
business food mm-hmm. and beverage incubator. It's really a fantastic
It's a
location.
Wonderful place. It's a wonderful place yeah. full of really inspired people.
And you guys, so I went to your monthly happy hour there. Mm-hmm. Where you
First
have,
Tuesdays, 5 to 7.
It's Listen, you have to go. Everybody who's listening to this, if you're in Brooklyn or Manhattan or New York City area, you have to go. It's really fantastic. Mm-hmm. You guys usually have a couple of kombuchas on.
Yep.
And so you get a chance to try them. It's very inexpensive, you know, kind of pay what you
That's right.
pay
we
as
have
you
cups
serve,
there,
self-serve.
So yep.
And then you guys usually have a beer on tap as well.
Mm-hmm, for the parties.
And then you can get a tour of their Scobie farm,
yep.
which is awesome.
Yes. We're very proud of it.
Yeah. I actually have a picture that we'll post on our site later that I took last time I was there.
Oh, great. You should send us the link.
How
definitely.
Big is this farm?
Oh, you know, it's several acres. No. It's, let's see, probably, what, 8 by 5 by 4 cube.
Feet.
8, 5, 4. Yes, not inches,
cool.
not
right.
acres.
Right. And they're shelves, and so it's
yeah.
right.
kombucha
stacked.
Stacked.
That's
yeah.
right. We have big vessels, little vessels, middle-sized vessels, all kinds of sizes, scobies, and different different sweeteners are trained to, and you know, different things we're kind of playing with in there. So
now we've talked about what scobies are before, but in case anybody hadn't heard those, what is a scoby?
A scoby is a fascinating creature. It's a symbiotic culture or colony of bacteria and yeast. It's an acronym. Mm-hmm. Symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. And it's really in the book you can read all about it, but I'll give you a little short glimpse into the crazy mind of us. The scoby has a very sophisticated architecture. If you look at it layer by layer, there's different species that are living in different layers. Okay, so I should go back. A scoby is the pancake-like kind of gelatinous thing.
That looks like an alien life form.
That looks exactly like an alien life form.
Crossed with a jellyfish.
Exactly, or some seaweed.
Right.
Which I think is where the name come from, is the look of this thing. Yeah. Kombu is a kind of seaweed, and some people may think it looks like seaweed.
Huh.
So anyway, it's this kind of thick patty, and it looks just like one uniform little thingy. But if you look at it under a microscope, it has these beautiful channels where liquids are passed from one layer to the next, and like air channels. So it's a really sophisticated kind of interaction of different species of bacteria and yeast. So they form this cellulose kind of network that they can do their business on. And one fascinating thing that I kind of love about it is if you're looking at like biodiversity, and as a scientist, you'll know this too, the greatest biodiversity is always at the edges of things. So like where the liquid meets the air is where the scoby grows. It's just, it's kind of a neat way of looking at it.
Definitely. So let's talk about what kombucha is. So you're starting with this symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So both the... So, and what kind of substrate are we talking about? So for all you homebrewers out there, your substrate is wort, or, you know, basically a sugar solution that's created with malted barley and wheat and rye.
Grains.
Mm-hmm. Right. So kombucha, one of the major differences is that you're not fermenting like a malted barley or barley-based beverage. You're fermenting.
We're fermenting with tea and sugar or a sugar source. So the basic kombucha recipe is black tea and cane sugar. There's many variations on that. You can, you know, our favorite kind of way to brew is to use a blend of black, green, and white teas. It brings out all the different wonderful flavor characteristics that the tea makers of many, many generations past have learned how to cultivate and treat. So you can get florality and the minerality and the deep tannins of the black tea, and you mix it together and you throw some sugar in there like cane sugar, or you can use honey for... Or you can use molasses. You can use different sweeteners, but different cultures thrive in those different sweeteners, right? So if you take a cane sugar trained colony or scoby and throw it into something like a honey brew, it may have a hard time getting on its legs in there because the honey has a lot of antimicrobial properties. So the basic kombucha recipe that we teach at first is just the tea and the sugar with mm-hmm. the culture.
And then in your book, so that's kind of the basics. That's what we, most of us know when we go out and drink kombucha or buy basic kombucha. Then there's also flavored kombucha.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's one of the things that I love about this book. So I've made kombucha before. I made kombucha several years ago. I kind of went on hiatus. I recently got a June SCOBY from you guys. Mm. So actually, let's, since I mentioned that, what June SCOBY is...
A honey-trained SCOBY.
Right. And it can be used any tea, but oftentimes they would use green tea. Or so, does it...
Well, there are compounds in the Camellia sinensis plant that the SCOBY needs. So you can use black tea, green tea, or white tea. Black tea has the most dense of those, so that it's going to be healthiest and most robust.
So you're talking about like micronutrients, basically.
That's right. Yep, okay. Exactly. And a green tea, it's going to be fine. And a white tea, you're going to need to cycle it through a green or a black every once in a while to keep it really robust.
Okay.
Yep. Can you teach an old SCOBY new tricks?
You sure can. You can teach an old SCOBY all kinds of new tricks.
So this June SCOBY, we could retrain for sugar or different
I would.
And how many generations would it take?
It depends on the sweetener and how kind of like raw and funky it is, right? If you're getting like a really raw honey that hasn't been pasteurized or hasn't been purified, you're going to get a lot more of the antimicrobial properties in there. So it depends on exactly what you're using. That being said, I do have a piece of advice for you. If you're trying to train a SCOBY to something, definitely keep your kind of standard batch going side by side, because if you totally screw up the experiment, you can always just start over again.
Basically, you would start with your SCOBY mother, which is, and then once it has this baby, where you can kind of peel off this matrix that is formed, that, you know, where you can peel that off. So go ahead and use like either the baby for your new retrain.
What do you mean peel off? Would you peel it off or would you cut the SCOBY?
So when you inoculate a batch, you're going to put a SCOBY inside. And every time you ferment another batch, a new SCOBY is going to grow on the surface. So sometimes that SCOBY that you inoculated with may be kind of riding close to it and they may connect. That doesn't always happen, though. You may end up with your SCOBY still kind of floating around the bottom or in the middle, and you'll have your free SCOBY up top. But they're usually very easy to separate if they connect, because... the new SCOBY is like where all the action is, and it's kind of got its own. It's like a teenager, you know. It's like, Mom, get away.
Yeah, and it definitely has. I mean, when you look at it, you can definitely tell a difference between the new formed SCOBY and the mother SCOBY. So, what are some of your favorite things about kombucha? Like, what attracted you to kombucha?
So, what attracted me to kombucha was that I was in this phase of my life where I'm like a biologist, I'm a microbiologist. I really love science. I love being able to kind of get to know things on a granular level. And I'm a foodie. I really like food. And I said to my, I was like, wow, you can actually ferment this stuff in your kitchen. It was when I first got into fermentation. I think it was the first ferment I ever made. And since then, I haven't found an easier to make ferment. I mean, it is really the easiest ferment out there. You don't need any special equipment. You don't need, you know, all you need to do is just boil some water and throw some stuff in there and then leave it alone. You know, it's not like, you know, your yogurts or your sauerkraut. You know, sauerkraut, you have to like break into little bits with your fingers and it gets painful. Yogurt, you need a dehydrator or a yogurt, you know, incubator or something. But kombucha just sits on your shelf. So I started making it because I was, you know, really interested and I didn't really realize the profound effect it would have on me when I started. I had traveled a lot when I was younger. I traveled to different countries, and I ate a lot of probably questionable things from street vendors. And over all this time, I just sort of developed a yucky belly, I'll say. It was kind of painful. Every day after lunch, I would just have this kind of, you know, this period of like 2 or 3 hours where I felt awful. And I couldn't do a lot of normal things. Like, I couldn't drink coffee to save my... I mean, it was terrible what would happen when I drank coffee. It was like hours later. I would just be bowled over in pain. So when I started drinking kombucha, I did it because I was just excited about, well, I can, you know, culture stuff in my kitchen. But then after I started drinking it a little while, I realized that some of those stomach things that I had been experiencing had been kind of alleviated. And I started, you know, thinking about it, looking into it a little bit more, and I became a believer, I guess. I became a believer that in fermented foods and in eating as though we are not separate from our ecosystem. And so that's really where the passion comes from, is that, you know, I think that kombucha is one of many really wonderful things that humans can do to make their lives better and to take control of things that have been kind of taken away from them by the industrial food system.
Mm-hmm. And it's also delicious.
And it is. And oh my gosh, is it delicious. I have to say that we just launched a new bottle program, these 12-ounce bottles. And in that, we've really just nailed a wonderful, healthy, and delicious beverage. I mean, like, I liked our old bottles a lot. I mean, whatever. I loved them. But these 12-ounce bottles, I get up in the morning, I'm like, I need a bottle of kombucha now. Wow. We have taken kombucha to a whole nother level now.
That's awesome.
Some certified kosher, right?
Yes, too. They're Orthodox Union. That's like the highest level of kosherness.
That's cool. Pretty awesome.
And they're all organic too.
We have to take a quick break.
Do it.
And we're gonna come back on Feel Mad About It. Feel Mad About It.
Feel Mad About It.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Foment About It on Heritage Radio Network. So we're in the studio today with Jessica Childs, co-owner of Kombucha Brooklyn and author, co-author of the excellent new book, Kombucha, with an exclamation point.
That's right.
All written out. No, wait. No, it's an
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, what kombucha is and what, you know, how you make it. This book is actually pretty amazing. I mean, like I said, I've made kombucha before. I also do water kefir. I've done a lot of, you know, whey fermented sodas, all kinds of different fermentations. But this really goes into depth. It's an excellent, excellent source. And I actually learned a lot of tips from reading it.
Oh.
One of the things is for those of you who are kombucha makers out there and you have your SCOBY and it's been around a while, and sometimes you you'll pick it up or you'll look at it in your jar and it'll have these stringy things hanging off. Mm-hmm. So what are those stringy things?
Those stringy things are essentially large, long, lustrous clusters of yeast. Yeast, as you brewers will know, likes to kind of stick, this is going to be kind of strange, but kind of head to butt. They make these like head to butt chains and go on and on like that. So those strands are just that. They're a bunch of, you know, you can think of them as like at the circus, they have those elephants that tie their little noses around the tails of the one in front of it. And it's really ridiculous and sad, but at least this is just yeast and, you know, you're not torturing them to do tricks for you. This is their natural way of being.
So I thought that was very interesting. The other thing is, I know in the past when I kept kombucha that occasionally I would get really lazy. You know, we all get caught up in life, and I would let my kombucha go too long, and it would become very vinegar-like.
Yes, that happens. That even happens to professionals in my own kitchen, which is probably why we ended up writing this book, to be honest. When you leave it for too long, there are many, many options. Number one, if you want to drink it like a beverage, like the beverage you intended to make, you can do this beautiful thing where you just brew more tea and sugar, like a sweetened tea, and you blend it with your overly acidified kombucha and bottle it. This is going to give you wonderful effervescence in the bottles. So what you're going to do is you're going to blend it, you're going to leave it on the counter for a day or two. let it continue to ferment. It'll give it more fuel, so it'll keep fermenting. It'll balance out the acids, and it gives you that nice bubbles.
And you could, so that's kind of like you could compare it to bottle conditioning in a beer. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of times, if you have especially certain types of beer, you might add definitely priming sugar and or yeast at the time of bottling. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same thing. You're basically adding more food.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Now there's a couple consequences of that. I mean, obviously it's going to cut down your vinegar, because once it gets in the bottle, there's not going to be any oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So the acetobacter, mm-hmm. which is causing the, you know, producing the acetic acid, isn't going to thrive. So it'll probably, I imagine, other compounds are formed instead.
How long do you secondary ferment beer in a bottle when you do that?
I would say a minimum of 2 weeks.
Okay, so with kombucha,
because you're basically trying to get carbonation. That's the main goal of a home brewer bottle conditioning.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's
depends
that's
on the temperature though too.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why you do this with kombucha as well, is to get those bubbles. That being said, it's a much shorter process. Mm-hmm. It's like 2 to 3 days. So I haven't done the test, but I assume there's enough dissolved gases in there to carry the oxygen through. They're not running out like that.
Yeah.
Because it will continue to become more and more acidic if you leave it out. If you leave it out for too long, again, if you're overly acidic and you throw it in there and just leave it out for a week or two, it's going to become vinegar again in there.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting is that when you guys talk about secondary ferments, sometimes you're talking about doing very long secondary ferments. Like, and I think it was compared it to lagering as in a beer.
That's right.
So that a lot of times, you know, it can kind of, this long conditioning at lower temperatures can kind of smooth out the flavors and bring more melding of the flavors.
Yes. And yeah, it rounds it out. If you do it at colder temperatures though, if it's in your regular room temperature, it's going to be too warm.
You're going to get your vinegar.
That's right.
If you do so.
Which is a delicious culinary treat, that vinegar. Definitely do not toss your vinegars.
Yeah. One thing also, so when I went to this kombucha Brooklyn happy hour, I was taken to the back where you guys have your SCOBY farm and all of your equipment, and I was offered something that turned out to be very delicious, and it was those, what do you call them, the rancher snacks, is that correct?
The SCOBY farmer snacks.
Yes.
Yeah, they're SCOBY snacks. They're so delicious.
SCOBY snacks.
So you guys are basically taking your SCOBY and you're chopping it up.
Yep.
And then dehydrating it.
That's right.
Which can be done, you probably have a dehydrator, but you can do it in the oven too.
Absolutely.
And then you rolled it. Wait, I think it was sugar, cinnamon, and chai spices.
That's
the one that I had.
Mm-hmm, there are many variations.
Yeah,
we get very creative with them, but they are delicious. I mean, yeah, they're so good.
I was surprised because honestly, I mean, I'd read about people making kombucha jerky and cooking with it, but that kombucha, it's pretty weird looking. I mean, it is a little creepy. Everybody thinks it's kind of creepy, but this was delicious. It was more like candied ginger.
Yep, and it's got a nice chew to it.
Yeah, and you guys have a ton of recipes in your book.
That's right. And the SCOBY Rancher snacks are in the book as well.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that we pretty quickly discovered after over-fermenting many batches and having just tons of fresh kombucha around us was that it was useful in more ways than just for drinking and, for kind of your energy and your detox drink. You can use it culinarily, and it really imparts a rich profile of flavors to a lot of different dishes. So, one thing that I think is sort of a beginner's kombucha culinary thing is to do it and to use it in a salad dressing.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of replace your vinegar. You might want to go a little bit lighter on any sweeteners or water that you would add, because you may not have a vinegar that's like as robust as like a balsamic or whatever you've got in your kitchen. But you can use it in a salad dressing, and you can go from there into a wide range of wonderful things. Like one of my favorite recipes in the book is actually a very kombucha heavy recipe where I just braise kale in kombucha, and it's nice. Amazing with some cranberries.
Sounds
and almonds.
Delicious.
I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's not it is, how do I describe it? When you cook it together with all the different flavors, it balances out. It's not just a beverage. It is a backbone for a lot of really delicious meals.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the wonderful effects of all the health compounds that are in there. But I will say that you should be a little bit careful not to make your entire Thanksgiving feast out of kombucha because you will be awake. It is still energizing when you cook it. So, in addition to our culinary treats that are in the book, we also, kind of went down the road of, how to make it fun for a party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we
so you have a lot of cocktail recipes.
Exactly. We developed several really nice cocktail recipes. We like to call it reverse toxmosis when you toxify while you're detoxifying. it's highly recommended. There's in kombucha is an acid called succinic acid, which you guys may know about. It's heavily researched, and there's been a lot of strong information concluding that it may alleviate hangovers by accelerating the process of acetaldehyde, decomposition, which is the hangover molecule, mm-hmm. right? So people have been drinking kombucha for a long time for hangovers, and so we thought we'd just go ahead and throw it in alcohol and preemptively, and it works.
Absolutely. Now, I think one of the other things, because you talk about all of these compounds that have been found in kombucha, mm-hmm. and the health benefits that have been found associated mm-hmm. with each of mm-hmm. these compounds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, kombucha is a living, fermented beverage. So everyone, depending on your SCOBY, every kombucha is probably a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everybody reacts differently. That's the other thing I like, is that you guys talk about, all these amazing health benefits that you guys have noticed, as well as a lot of other people out there. But it's not a pill. This is something that is just great to integrate into your regular diet.
That's right. And we talk a lot about sort of the kombucha lifestyle in this book. Like it extends beyond just drinking kombucha. It extends to like how you take care of yourself and your family and your friends and how you view sort of what you put in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And kombucha obviously is one kind of cornerstone of a lot of different things, like eating fresh vegetables, which is better than eating ones that have been canned for numerous reasons. But
absolutely. Mm-hmm. The other thing I like is that you guys have beauty recipes in here.
Yes, we do.
So that's one thing I never thought about. Again, now I know if I get a little lazy with my kombucha and it gets a little too vinegary, I can, blend it back in and go into secondary. But also, you have a lot of recipes for like face masks and...
That's right, because, the lining of your GI tract is made of epithelial cells, which is the same cell type as your skin cells. So, for instance, Eric, my husband and my partner in life and in the book and in the company and my baby daddy, anyway, goes on and on. He has a dairy allergy. And what happens when he eats dairy is not something inside, it's on the outside. He gets eczema, like immediately, within hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So when your GI tract is unhappy, or when your skin's unhappy, when your GI tract's unhappy, it sends off hormones into your body, and those hormones are read by all the epithelial cells in your body, including your skin, right? So what's good for the epithelial cells on the inside is also good for the cells on the outside. So when you apply it directly to your skin, you can definitely tell after I do a kombucha face mask, because my skin is glowing. It's really clear, and it looks like, like it's nourished, mm-hmm. in a way that I have not experienced with other beauty products. I think that there's something about it being very fresh. When you have fresh, raw, robust kombucha, mm-hmm. at your house and you're putting it on, it's different than getting a can of clay or whatever off the beauty shelf.
Right,
it's a living thing that you're interacting with.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
How is a home kombucha person? How much are you refeeding the SCOBY, and what's the best temperature for the SCOBYs?
So the SCOBYs are best at room temperature, really. The high or the mid to high 70s, that area. Well, I'd say the entire 70s range. But if you get up into the higher 70s and into the 80s, you're going to start seeing higher acid notes, mm-hmm. in your kombucha. You're not going to be able to control the acetic acid as well. So it's going to taste much more like vinegar before it would if you were in the low 70s, right? So there's a range that it will operate in. If you get down into the 60s, mid 60s and lower, that's when you run the risk of starting to get contamination, and it's because the ferment is not chugging along fast enough,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you're in like basic room temperature range, it's really hard to contaminate kombucha, because it's just a robust and very, there are so many species in there, and how microbes and the environment work. They're in constant competition with each other, right? And so these ones are friends, and they have their little click going in there, and if anybody comes in there, they're like, ah, out now, unless they're like laying on the couch sluggish because it's too cold,
right. But the other thing is, when you we should backpedal just a little bit and say, when you start a new SCOBY,
mm-hmm.
you're not only using a you know, a tea and sugar base, but you're also adding some acidity in there, from some existing kombucha or adding vinegar if you're starting fresh.
That's right.
So you're basically bringing down the pH in order to, A, help the SCOBY thrive and also outcompete the other
negative organisms. That's right, for that first little time. Yep, exactly.
So I'd imagine that that also, because so we have our, we have this loft and it's very cold in the winter. It's like in the 50s. And I actually built an incubation chamber so that I could, you know, keep some of my cultures going in the winter, basically with a grow mat. So I think that's an easy way. But also I think making sure that your culture is acidic enough to start with will probably help as well.
That and then the third big mistake that people make is putting the SCOBY and culture in or the, in the liquid acidifier in too soon after they've boiled the tea. So the tea's got to be brought down to room temperature before you
kill your SCOBY.
Exactly.
Just like with almost anything you ferment. Beer, same way. We have to chill our beer before we pitch our yeast.
That's right. So. Yep. And you can't cook your cabbage before you mash it into a jar for sauerkraut.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, you can't kill the culture before it goes in.
Yeah.
How about light and fermentation? Yeah. Does it affect it at all?
There have been, there's a lot of conflicting data. I mean, I've had kombucha sitting in my window. It doesn't have any problem. It's a short ferment. It's not, you know, you're not there for 6 months, UV lights and all of that. It's, I will say that once it's in a bottle and you're trying to, you know, ship it around and all of that stuff, you might want to, you know, keep it in, you know, in the dark a little bit, just because UV light is known to break down vitamins and you know, and acids and different molecules that are in our food. So if you want to protect your food and keep it as nutritious as possible, it's best to keep it kind of dark.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
You're making kombucha on a very big scale. How big are your SCOBYs and how big can they get?
Oh, that's, you know, that's a great question. SCOBYs.
I've seen the movie The Blob, and I feel like it's kind of what kombucha Brooklyn is like.
Beware of the blob, it beeps. You know, there's some really cool research being done with kombucha right now, where they're growing it in vats. The one thing about kombucha fermentation is it does have a surface to volume ratio that has to be, you know, within a certain range. So you can't get into a really deep tank, right, and expect to have a nice, robust kombucha going. But you can grow it in, like, shallow vats. So people are making, like, sheets of the cellulose out of kombucha ferment and turning it into things like clothing.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's a fantastic...
Well, I know what I'm Googling when I get
Exactly.
There's some great...
I think there may be even a TED Talk by the woman who's really pioneering this. Huh. But, you know, I think that there's a great future. I mean, it's cellulose. It's essentially paper, but it's, you know, liquefied. And, I mean, there's got to be something amazing we can do with all these SCOBYs we're composting.
You know,
other than composting, which is amazing. So, SCOBYs can be huge. I mean, I can imagine, I kind of have this weird back of my head vision of using kombucha production to heat something above it. You know,
that makes sense.
It is a reaction. It definitely generates some heat. So it'd be cool to, you know, I don't know, heat a greenhouse with it or something.
Yeah, multifunction. So again, we were here today in the studio with Jessica Childs, who's co-owner of Kombucha Brooklyn and author of the new book Kombucha with an exclamation point. And it's an awesome book. Honestly, if you're an active kombucha maker now or you want to get into it, I would highly recommend it. The other thing is you guys stock a full variety of SCOBYs as well as kits, from beginner kits to all
That's
kinds, right?
Everything you need.
And
everything
then you also you have classes at the store.
That's right.
Or at your facility
That's
store.
That's right. We teach classes both at our lab space and around the city at different places. And we're always looking for new venues to teach in. So if anybody wants to host a fermentation, kombucha fermentation workshop, I'll be happy to talk to you about that.
Very cool. Awesome. And they're all listed on your website under the events section.
That's right. So, That's right. Yeah. And we have, you know, everything you need to brew at home, even down to the heat mats that you could put under.
Oh, yeah,
you can
get
very economical. Put a heat mat under it, wrap a towel around it. Booyah.
Yeah. And you guys have some great kits. Like, it's kind of like the beginner homebrewer kits that we see in, you know, in our homebrew supply.
Yep.
You're the equivalent of that for kombucha.
Yes, indeed. And we have a YouTube channel that has lots of how-to videos, and we have a... Pretty much everybody in our office of about 10 people now, we all know how to brew of kombucha. So you can pick up the phone at any time and call us, and we'll be there to answer your questions. Anyone who picks up the phone will be like, yeah, I can get that for you.
That's fantastic.
And everybody that I met that at the last happy hour was amazingly nice and helpful. So, yeah, you guys
have a great culture.
Yeah, it is. So thank you again so much for speaking with us. Please check out their website and the new book, Kombucha, by Eric and Jessica Childs.
Yep. Check it out.
Ferment about
Ferment
it.
About
Thank you so
it.
Much.
Thanks for Ferment having me. Ferment about it. Hey.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.